A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi, Herman and Corin. In some episodes, I've talked about how I think one of the... I mean, there's just a huge amount of AI use cases and agentic AI use cases that when people say, what's agentic AI actually good for? Sometimes when I see the type of things that people are like selling under the banner of agentic AI, like it's going to totally transform your business workflow and automate all of your customer support, I'm like... I get why people are skeptical because it probably can't do that yet. But there's so many little things I find that it can totally do that they get bucketed under what's been known up to date as no code use of agentic AI that I also think is totally off the mark because it maintains this kind of code centricity that is collapsing before our eyes as the concept of whether you know how to code or not becomes irrelevant because AI agents will be doing it anyway. And one of those use cases that I think is, if I were to ask, you know, you might say Claude can do everything. And I'd say, yes, Claude Code CLI is utterly fantastic. And I've spent the last year in large part creating business tools and personal productivity tools that are just based around that. And the next thing that person might say, well, give me an example. And I'd say, sure, here's one. So you know how I have this podcast called My Word Prompts, or I'm doing voiceovers on YouTube. And the person might say, sure. And I'd say, well, you know, I'm recording these on my phone and I want the audio to sound decent for the podcast. So I've used AI to profile my voice. I give it 30 seconds of my audio and I tell AI something like, hey, when I record this or when I send this up to the audio pipeline, just without any processing, I feel like I sound a bit nasally. I feel like there's this awkward background noise. Could you look at 30 seconds of this audio? Here is a voice processing script I found on GitHub. And just look at what you're seeing in the waveforms. What for, like if we want to create a little EQ profile, what would we do? And the AI tool cooks up an EQ profile based upon listening to your voice and then applies it and says, what do you think? Is that better? And you say, that's totally better. This is amazing. Can I use this profile again? And the AI has now given you a personal EQ script. Now, it's a little bit more complex because the audio purists or even just serious podcasters know that you probably aren't going to have one EQ that works for across the board, right? You're going to have different results with different microphones, but it's a great starting point to iterate upon. And this is a use case I've personally done. And I would probably give that as my example. So a long way of introducing Herman and Corin, the concept of mastering, but also maybe the idea of using AI agents to do some of that process. And I think about some of my most passionate audiophile friends who might hear this. And I always want to emphasize, I always look at AI through the prism of tools that can make the work of passionate humans more productive rather than as replacements for them. And this is exactly what I'm thinking here. I'm thinking about creating a baseline known mastering preset or EQ based upon a certain voice, but then ultimately the human stepping in. So let's before we get to, or maybe that's an episode for, that's another episode about programmatic audio editing and mastering, because it is a thing, like video and audio, like video and images. And we could definitely do an episode just looking at the tools. But before we get into that one, let's set the stage a bit by actually understanding what we mean by mastering, because there's certain basic audio edits, like we have compression, audio gates, EQ, as we talked about. And we can, if we're talking about podcast audio, we might also be talking about silence, truncation, VAD, those kind of pipelines. And then there's this other step that's after you have a decent audio, sometimes people still go through a mastering process. And I've always kind of understood mastering to be this kind of mysterious discipline by which we take audio that already sounds nice and we just give it a certain brightness. Now, I'm curious to know, I have a number of questions to kind of weave in here. The first is that when we talk about spoken audio, like a podcast, that delivery format, is mastering even a thing? Audiobooks, can you master and remaster an audio? Or is it purely when we're talking about actual music? And the second one is, and I just want to make a recommendation here for, there's some great YouTube resources about mastering. I think one's called Mastering with the Experts. I may have got that name wrong. You may be able to correct me, which would be cool. But you'll see guys in these, you know, crazy audio setups, and they're basically mastering tracks. So I'd love to understand a little bit more clarity where audio editing stops and mastering begins in today's episode of My Word Prompts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's a good setup. He's asking us to demystify audio mastering, specifically for spoken word like podcasts and audiobooks. But he's also pointing at something bigger, the way people miss what agentic AI is actually useful for right now because they're looking for the wrong things. He gives his own example of using AI to profile his voice and generate a custom EQ script. So there's two layers here. What mastering actually is, and what it looks like when you use AI not to replace an audio engineer, but to give a non-engineer a running start.
I love this framing because he's right. The stuff that actually works today often gets dismissed as just no code or just a script, when it's really a person directing an AI agent to do something that would have required hiring someone or learning a whole discipline. By the way, today's episode is powered by DeepSeek V4 Pro, so we'll see how it handles audio nerdery.
I have confidence. All right, let's get the basic question on the table before we go anywhere else. When we talk about spoken word audio, a podcast, an audiobook, is mastering even a thing? Or is that purely a music concept?
It's absolutely a thing, and it's one of those distinctions that even people in audio sometimes blur. Mastering, at its core, is the final step between a finished mix and the distribution format. For music, that means taking a mixed stereo track and preparing it for vinyl, or streaming, or CD. For spoken word, it's taking your edited dialogue and preparing it for whatever platform it's going to live on. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audible, YouTube. The goals are different, but the step exists.
When someone says, I mastered my podcast episode, what are they actually doing? What's the checklist?
A few things. One is loudness normalization, hitting a target L level, which stands for loudness units relative to full scale. For podcasts, the standard is typically around -16 L. For stereo, -19, for mono, depending on the platform. Spotify asks for -14. Audible wants -18 to -23 for audiobooks, which is a whole different ballgame. If you just upload raw audio, it might sound quiet compared to everything else. Or the platform might apply its own normalization and squash your dynamics in ways you didn't intend.
-16L. I've seen that number on meters. What's actually happening when you hit it?
Is a measure of perceived loudness over time, not peak level. It tries to model how human ears actually experience loudness. So when you master to -16L, you're making sure your episode sits at a consistent apparent volume from start to finish, which matters because listeners shouldn't have to ride their volume knob between your intro and your main segment. And you do that with a combination of compression and limiting. Compression evens out the dynamic range. A limiter sets a hard ceiling so nothing clips. But for spoken word, you're usually doing much gentler compression than for music, because you don't want to squeeze the life out of a voice.
This is where I think the mystery comes in. Daniel mentioned this idea of mastering as taking audio that already sounds nice and giving it a certain brightness. That sounds almost like a final polish rather than a technical fix.
That's exactly the right way to think about it, and it's why mastering engineers exist as a separate profession from mixing engineers. By the time audio hits the mastering stage, all the individual problems should already be solved. The plosives are tamed, the background noise is gone, the levels between speakers are balanced. Mastering is where you make global decisions about how the whole thing sounds as one piece. For a podcast, that might mean a gentle high-shelf EQ boost to add clarity, or a subtle multi-band compressor to control low-end rumble without affecting the vocal range. It's the difference between this sounds fine and this sounds finished.
Okay, so let's draw the line Daniel's asking for. Where does editing stop and mastering begin? Because he mentions silence truncation, voice activity detection, noise gates. Those feel like editing tasks.
Here's how I'd break it down. The editing stage is corrective and content focused. You're cutting out mistakes, removing long silences, maybe using a de-esser to tame sibilance, applying a noise gate to kill background hum between phrases, running voice activity detection to strip out dead air. This is where tools like iZotope RX or Adobe Podcast built-in processing live. Mastering is the stage after that, where you're not fixing problems anymore. You're making the whole file cohesive and platform-ready. So you're setting the final loudness, applying broad-stroke EQ, maybe adding a touch of harmonic saturation for warmth, and exporting in the right format with the right metadata.
Harmonic saturation. That's a new term in this conversation. What is that?
It's subtle distortion, essentially, but the good kind. Analog gear, tape machines, tube preamps, transformer-coupled consoles adds very slight harmonic overtones when you push signal through them. Our ears interpret those overtones as warmth, presence, body. In the digital world, you can simulate that with plugins. For a podcast voice, a tiny bit of saturation can make someone sound more present, less sterile, without being noticeable as an effect.
You're adding back the imperfections that digital recording stripped out in carefully measured doses.
It's one of those things where if you do it right, nobody notices. If you bypass it, suddenly everything sounds a little thinner, and nobody can quite say why.
Daniel mentioned a YouTube series he thought was called Mastering with the Experts. He wasn't sure about the name. Does that ring a bell?
I think he might be thinking of Mixing with the Masters, which is a well-known series where top engineers break down their process on real projects. There's also a series called Mastering the Mix. That's more of a tutorial channel. But the scene he's describing, guys in crazy acoustic setups with walls of outboard gear, that's been a whole genre of YouTube audio content for years. People like Bob Katz, who literally wrote the book on mastering, have done extensive interviews and masterclasses. Katz is the one who popularized the K-system metering and a lot of the loudness concepts we still use.
So if someone wants the foundational text, they start there.
His book is called Mastering Audio, The Art and the Science. It's been through multiple editions. It's dense, but it's the reference. And what's relevant to Daniel's point is that Katz has always been very clear that mastering is not about making things loud. It's about making things translate. A well-mastered podcast should sound good on earbuds, in a car, on a home speaker system. That's the translation problem.
Let's pivot to the AI side, because that's where Daniel's actual use case lives. He described recording on his phone, feeding 30 seconds of audio to an AI, saying, "I sound nasally, there's background noise, here's a voice processing script from GitHub, analyze the waveforms and cook up an EQ profile for me." Then the AI builds it, applies it, asks for feedback, and iterates. He calls this a personal EQ script. What's actually happening under the hood there?
There's a couple of layers. First, the AI is doing spectral analysis. It's looking at the frequency content of his voice sample. Every voice has a fundamental frequency and a series of harmonics and certain resonances that make it sound the way it does. Nasality, for example, often shows up as an emphasis around 800 to 1200 Hz. If Daniel hears nasality, the AI can identify that frequency bump and suggest a cut. The clever part is that it's not just applying a preset, it's analyzing a specific recording and tailoring the curve.
The GitHub script piece? He mentioned giving the AI a voice processing script he found and asking it to work from that.
That's where the agentic part comes in. A lot of open source audio processing is done with tools like FFmpeg or SOAX, command line utilities that take filter parameters. Someone might have written a script that applies a chain of filters, noise reduction, compression, EQ. Daniel's AI agent can read that script, understand what each filter does, and then modify the parameters based on what it sees in his audio. It's not writing DSP code from scratch. It's configuring an existing pipeline intelligently. That's a much more tractable problem, and it's why this use case actually works today, not in some hypothetical future.
The AI's role is translator and configurator. It reads the script, reads the waveform, translates "I sound nasally" into cut around 1 kHz by about 3 decibels with a Q of 1.5, plugs that into the right spot in the script, runs it, and presents the result.
And then the feedback loop? Is that better? Is crucial because audio is perceptual. Two people with the same voice recording might want different things. One wants more warmth, one wants more clarity. The AI can't decide that for you. But it can iterate fast. A human engineer might take a few minutes per revision cycle. An AI running FFmpeg on a local machine can reprocess a 30-second clip in under a second.
That speed changes the dynamic. You're not committing to an hour-long session with an engineer. You're experimenting in real time until you hear what you like.
Then you save that profile. Now, every time Daniel records on his phone, he runs that same EQ chain and it sounds like him, just better. He mentioned audio purists pointing out that different microphones need different EQs, which is true. A phone mic has a very different frequency response than a large diaphragm condenser. But as a starting point, having a personalized baseline is enormously valuable. It's the difference between starting from zero and starting from 80%.
This connects to something Daniel said that I want to pull out, because I think it's the core of his argument about agentic AI. He said people are skeptical because they're being sold. It'll totally transform your business and automate all your customer support, and that doesn't work yet. But the small things, using an AI agent to configure an audio pipeline, to generate a custom EQ profile, those do work, and they get bucketed under no-code, as if that's a lesser category. He thinks that label misses the point.
It absolutely misses the point. No-code implies the user is still doing the work just with a visual interface instead of text. What Daniel's describing is different. He's not clicking through a UI to build a workflow. He's having a conversation with an AI agent that writes and modifies code on his behalf. The agent is the coder. He's the director. That's not no code, that's code, by agent. And it collapses the relevance of whether Daniel himself knows how to write an FFmpeg filter chain. He doesn't need to. He needs to know what he wants it to sound like and be able to describe that.
There's something almost philosophical here. For a long time, learning to code was framed as the gateway to making computers do useful things. But if AI agents can write the code, the gateway shifts. It becomes about knowing what's possible and being able to articulate what you want. The bottleneck isn't syntax, it's taste and clarity of intent.
Daniel knows his own voice. He knows what nasally means in audio terms. He knows what a good podcast should sound like. He doesn't know the precise EQ curve to achieve that, but he can evaluate the output. That's a completely different skill set from audio engineering. And it's the skill set that agentic AI rewards.
Let me play skeptic for a moment. Someone listening might say, this is just an advanced preset. Audio software has had podcast voice presets for years. How is this different?
A preset is static. It applies the same curve to every voice, every microphone, every room. A generic podcast voice preset might boost presence frequencies that actually make Daniel's nasality worse. The AI-generated profile is bespoke. It's derived from his actual audio, responding to his actual concerns. That's the difference between off-the-rack and tailored. And tailored has historically been expensive, because it required a human expert's time.
The economic argument is, this makes bespoke audio processing accessible to someone who couldn't justify hiring a mastering engineer for a podcast episode.
A professional mastering engineer might charge $100 to $300 per hour. For a weekly podcast, that adds up fast. If an AI agent can get you to a solid baseline in minutes for effectively zero marginal cost, the human engineer's role shifts. They become the person you call for the final 10%, the special episodes, the audiobook that needs to meet Audible's strict technical standards. Daniel was explicit about this. He sees AI as a tool that makes passionate humans more productive, not a replacement.
Let's talk about the tools landscape, because Daniel hinted that there's a whole episode's worth of programmatic audio editing tools to explore. What's actually out there for someone who wants to do what he's describing?
The stack breaks down into a few layers. At the bottom, you've got the command line workhorses. FFmpeg is the big one. It can do almost anything. Format conversion, filtering, loudness normalization, EQ, compression, silence detection. SOX is another one, more specialized for audio manipulation. These are what scripts and AI agents typically drive. One layer up, you've got libraries like PyDub for Python, which wrap FFmpeg in a more accessible interface, or Librosa for more analytical work like spectral analysis. Then you've got the graphical tools. Audacity is free and open source. Isotobar X is the professional standard for repair work. Adobe Audition, Reaper, Hindenburg, which is actually built specifically for spoken word and radio journalism.
Hindenburg. I've heard radio people swear by that one.
It's designed around the workflow of a journalist or podcaster rather than a musician. It has auto-leveling that's optimized for voice, built-in loudness compliance for different broadcast standards, and a clipboard-based editing model that's very fast once you learn it. For someone who just wants to record and publish without building a whole processing pipeline, it's a strong choice.
Daniel's approach is more programmatic. He wants a repeatable chain he can run without opening a D, a digital audio workstation, every time.
And that's where the AI agent approach shines. You build a chain once, validate it, and then it's a single command. Record, run script, publish. The script handles noise reduction, EQ, compression, loudness normalization, and outputs a file that's ready for your podcast host. If you change microphones or recording environments, you tweak the profile and regenerate.
Let's dig into the actual processing steps for spoken word, because I think a lot of podcasters don't know what their audio could benefit from. Walk me through a hypothetical chain.
Step one is usually noise reduction. Even in a quiet room, there's ambient noise, computer fans, air conditioning, street sounds bleeding through windows. Tools like RN Noise, which is a neural network-based noise suppressor, or the noise reduction modules in Isotope RX can learn the noise profile from a silent section of your recording and subtract it from the whole file. Step 2 is a high-pass filter, sometimes called a low-cut filter, set around 80 to 100 Hz. That removes sub-bass rumble that the human voice doesn't produce, but that microphones pick up. Handling noise, desk vibrations, that kind of thing.
Before you even touch the voice itself, you've cleaned up the environment.
Step 3 is where you start shaping the voice, EQ. A typical spoken word EQ might include a gentle boost around 3 to 6 kHz for clarity and presence, a cut in the low mids around 200 to 400 Hz if the voice sounds muddy or boomy, and maybe a shelf boost above 10 kHz for air. But these are all voice dependent. That's where the AI profiling Daniel described becomes valuable. For spoken word, you typically want a fairly low ratio, maybe 2 to 1 or 3 to 1, with a threshold set so it's only catching the louder peaks. The goal isn't to squash the dynamics, it's to reduce the distance between the quietest and loudest parts so the listener doesn't have to strain or get startled. After compression, a limiter or a loudness normalizer brings the whole thing to your target L. Some people also add a de-esser somewhere in this chain to tame harsh S&T sounds, which can be particularly annoying on earbuds.
All of this can be encoded in the script that an AI agent writes and modifies.
And the beautiful thing is that once it's working, it's deterministic. Same input, same output. You're not relying on the AI to make a judgment call every time. The judgment happened during the profiling phase. The production pipeline is just executing the profile.
That's an important distinction. The AI isn't in the hot path. It's not processing every episode in real time and making decisions on the fly. It was used to design the pipeline, and then the pipeline runs on its own.
Which also addresses reliability concerns. If you had an AI making real-time EQ decisions on every episode, you'd get variability. Maybe it misjudges one day. Maybe the model updates and changes its behavior. By using the AI to generate a static profile that you validated, you get the benefit of the AI's analysis without the risk of ongoing inconsistency.
Let's circle back to Daniel's question about audiobooks. Can you master and remaster an audiobook? Is the process different from a podcast?
The process is similar, but the standards are stricter. Audible, which dominates the audiobook market, has very specific technical requirements. They want files that pass their ACX check. Audiobook Creation Exchange, which measures things like peak level, noise floor, and RMS loudness within very tight tolerances. If your file fails, it gets rejected. So audiobook mastering is partly creative, making the narrator sound great, and partly compliance work. You're mastering to a spec.
It's more constrained than podcast mastering.
Podcasts have a lot of latitude. Different platforms have different loudness targets, but nobody's rejecting your episode because it's 2 decibels too quiet. They'll just normalize it, maybe badly. Audiobooks have a gatekeeper, and that makes the AI use case even more compelling because you can have an agent that knows the ACX spec inside out and can validate your file against it before you submit.
I can imagine an audiobook narrator who records at home, doesn't have an engineering background, and this kind of tooling is the difference between Audible ready and rejected three times.
There's a whole community of independent narrators who are exactly in that position. They're voice actors, not engineers. They invested in a decent microphone and some acoustic treatment, but the mastering step is a black box. An AI-assisted pipeline that gets them to compliance would be genuinely transformative.
Daniel mentioned one more thing I want to touch. The idea that we could do a whole episode on programmatic audio editing and mastering, because it is a thing like video and images. He's right. The computer vision world has had programmatic image processing for decades. Image Magic, OpenCV, all the Python imaging libraries. Audio has the same thing, it's just less visible.
It's less visible because audio is harder to demonstrate in a tweet. You can't embed an audio processing result in a screenshot, but the tooling is just as mature. FFmpeg has been around since the year 2000. It powers a huge percentage of the world's audio and video processing, often invisibly. When you upload a video to YouTube and it processes it, FFmpeg or something very like it is probably in the pipeline somewhere.
Now AI agents can drive these tools. That's the new part. The tools existed, but the interface was the command line, which meant you needed to know the incantations. Now the interface is natural language.
That's what Daniel's getting at with the code centricity collapsing point. For decades, the way you made computers do sophisticated things was by learning their language. We're now at a point where you can describe the outcome and the computer figures out the incantation. That doesn't mean coding is obsolete. Someone still needs to write FFmpeg, someone still needs to build the AI models. But the population of people who can deploy sophisticated audio processing just expanded by a factor of 1,000.
There's a tension here that I think is worth naming. The audio purists Daniel referenced, the ones with the treated rooms and the outboard gear, might look at an AI-generated EQ profile and say it's not real mastering. And, in a sense, they're right. A professional mastering engineer brings decades of ear training, reference tracks, and understanding of how different playback systems color sound. An AI can't replicate that.
No, it can't. But the question isn't, is this as good as a professional mastering engineer? The question is this better than what the person would have had otherwise? And for someone recording on their phone with no audio background, the answer is overwhelmingly yes. The AI-generated profile might not be perfect, but it's a massive improvement over raw phone audio. And Daniel's framing is exactly right. It's a baseline that the human can then iterate on.
It's the difference between having zero expertise and having a junior engineer who works for free and responds instantly.
Who you can fire without guilt when you eventually outgrow them. At some point, if Daniel's podcast gets big enough, he might hire a real mastering engineer. But until then, the AI pipeline gets him from unlistenable to professional sounding without being the bottleneck.
Let's talk about one more dimension of this. The fact that the AI isn't just applying a preset, it's having a dialogue. Daniel said the AI shows him the result and asks, "What do you think? Is that better?" That conversational iteration is a different paradigm from tweaking knobs.
It's a fundamentally different interface. Traditional audio tools give you a parametric EQ with knobs for frequency, gain, and Q. If you don't know what those mean, you're stuck. The conversational interface lets you say it's still a bit harsh in the high end, and the AI translates that into reduce the high shelf by another decibel. You're describing the symptom, not the treatment.
Which is how most people actually think about audio. They don't think in hertz, they think in metaphors. Warm, bright, harsh, muddy, airy, nasal. These are perceptual descriptors, not technical parameters.
Mapping perceptual descriptors to technical parameters is exactly what audio engineers spend years learning. It's a translation skill. AI is getting very good at that translation. Not perfect, but good enough to be useful.
If I'm a podcaster listening to this and thinking, I want to try this, what's my first step? What do I actually do?
The simplest entry point is to take a 30-second sample of your raw voice, feed it to Claude or whatever AI you're using, and say, here's my raw audio. I want it to sound more professional for a podcast. Analyze the frequency content, suggest an EQ curve, and give me an FFmpeg command that applies it. The AI will give you a command you can run. You run it, listen, come back and say a little less bass or more clarity, and it'll adjust. After 3 or 4 rounds, you'll have something that sounds markedly better than what you started with.
You saved that command, and now it's your personal preset.
And if you want to go further, you can build a whole script that chains noise reduction, EQ, compression, and normalization into one command. The AI can write the whole thing. You just need to be able to run it.
I want to come back to something Daniel said at the very top of his prompt, because I think it's the philosophical core here. He said people ask what's agentic AI actually good for, and the things being sold. Total business transformation, fully automated customer support. Make skeptics out of reasonable people because it can't do that yet. But the small, concrete use cases that do work get dismissed as trivial or mislabeled as no code.
That dismissal is costly because it blinds people to what's actually changing. The fact that a non-engineer can now generate a personalized audio processing chain by describing what they want in plain English, that's not trivial. That's a capability that would have cost real money and real time just a few years ago. Multiply that across every domain where there's a gap between I know what good looks like and I know how to produce it, and you're looking at a massive democratization of technical capability.
The word democratization gets thrown around a lot, but this is a genuine case. Audio engineering has been gated by both money and knowledge. You either paid someone or you spent months learning. Now the gate is just, can you describe what you hear and what you want?
Can you tell when it sounds better? That's the other half. The AI can generate options, but you have to evaluate them. Taste still matters. Critical listening still matters. The AI isn't replacing your ears, it's giving your ears more leverage.
All right, let's zoom out for a second. We've covered what mastering is, where the editing-mastering boundary sits, the specific processing steps for spoken word, the AI use case Daniel described, and the broader argument about agentic AI. What haven't we touched?
I think we should talk about the mastering for different distribution platforms, because that's a practical thing people run into. If you're publishing the same audio to YouTube, Spotify, and your podcast host, you might actually want different masters.
Isn't audio just audio?
Different platforms apply different processing. YouTube normalizes to around -14L and will turn down anything louder. Spotify does the same, but their loudness target is slightly different and they use a different normalization algorithm. Some podcast apps don't normalize at all. If you master to -16 and upload everywhere, you're probably fine for most platforms. But if you're being precise, you might want a -14 master for YouTube, a -16 master for your podcast R feed, and a -20 master for Audible. That's 3 versions of the same episode.
Which sounds like a perfect job for a script. Render 3 versions with different loudness targets automatically.
Trivial for FFmpeg. One command with 3 different output parameters, and an AI agent can write that script in seconds.
I'm thinking about the mastering with the experts type content Daniel mentioned. These engineers with walls of analog gear making tiny adjustments that they swear they can hear. There's a whole culture around mastering as an art form. Do you think AI-assisted mastering threatens that? Or is it a completely different market?
It's a different market. The person hiring a mastering engineer for a music album that took 2 years to make is not going to replace them with an FFmpeg script. That relationship is about trust, taste, and a human making creative judgments. But the person recording a weekly podcast in their closet? They were never going to hire that engineer. The AI isn't taking work from mastering engineers. It's serving people who were never in the market for professional mastering in the first place.
That's the expanding the pie argument. It's not zero sum.
And I think Daniel's instinct to emphasize that, I see AI as a tool that makes passionate humans more productive, not a replacement, is the right framing. The passionate humans are still there. They just have better tools.
Let's do a quick lightning round on common misconceptions about audio mastering for spoken word. Hit me with a few.
First one, louder is better. It's not. Overcompressed spoken word is fatiguing to listen to. The loudness wars happened in music and everyone lost. Don't repeat it for podcasts. Second, you need expensive gear. You don't. A decent microphone in a treated room with good software processing will get you 90% of the way there. The room matters more than the microphone, and the microphone matters more than the preamp. Third, mastering can fix a bad recording. It can't. If the performance is flat, or the room echo is terrible, or the microphone is clipping, mastering can't undo that. Garbage in, garbage out.
That third one is important. Mastering is polish, not rescue.
The time to fix problems is during recording and editing. Mastering is the final gloss.
One more thing. Daniel mentioned V, voice activity detection, as part of the pipeline. Where does that fit?
Is typically an editing stage tool. It identifies sections where someone is speaking versus sections of silence or noise. You use it to strip out dead air or to apply different processing to speech versus non-speech sections. For example, you might want to run noise reduction only on the non-speech parts to avoid artifacts on the voice. Models are very good. They can distinguish between a pause for breath and actual silence, which is important for keeping natural pacing.
That's another place where AI has quietly gotten much better. Voice activity detection used to be pretty crude, just an amplitude threshold. Now it's neural networks that understand speech patterns.
Is a popular open source model that's extremely accurate and runs fast on a CPU. It's the kind of thing you can drop into a processing script and it just works. Again, the tools exist. It's the integration and configuration that's becoming AI accessible.
I think we've covered the ground Daniel laid out. We've demystified mastering for spoken word, drawn the line between editing and mastering, walked through the processing chain, explored the AI use case, and touched on the bigger argument about what agentic AI is actually good for right now. Anything you want to add before we wrap?
Just that I appreciate Daniel's instinct to ground this in a real example. The "I did this, here's exactly what I did, here's what it produced" format is way more convincing than abstract claims about what AI might do someday. And the EQ profile use case is clever. It's the kind of thing that makes you realize the tools have been sitting there waiting for someone to connect them.
And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The national animal of Scotland is the unicorn. It has been since the 1200s, when it was used on the Scottish royal coat of arms. Scotland is one of the few countries whose national animal is a mythological creature.
Right. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you want more episodes, head to myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back with another one soon.
See you then.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.